debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Okay, so today there's another hearing in front of the Judiciary Committee. So this is what Mr. Burks said, the attorney for the Democrats. He points out that the Republicans are saying, this is unfair. We can't go ahead. We can't take a vote. We can't decide on this because we haven't heard from the actual fact witnesses, the people who are right there at the middle of things. We haven't seen the documents. So how can we go ahead? So this is Burke's response. He says, the reason we've not heard from all witnesses or documents is because President Trump himself has obstructed this investigation. He's directed his most senior aides who were involved in some of these events not to come testify, to defy subpoenas. He has told every one of his agencies with records that could be relevant not to produce those records to us to try to obstruct our investigation. Now, this is evidence that President Trump is replaying the playbook used in the prior Department of Justice investigation. That would be the Mueller investigation. In that investigation, he directed his White House counsel to create a false, phony record and document and lie, denying that President Trump had told him to fire the special counsel. He did many other things to try to interfere with that investigation. He attacked the investigators and the witnesses and called them horrible names, just as he has done here. This is Mr. Burke laying out, basically, obstruction of Congress, or obstruction of justice. And then he continues. And President Trump thought he could get away with it. On July 24th, that was the day that the special counsel testified before this committee, that would be Robert Mueller, and the House Intelligence Committee, the 24th. It was exactly the following day, the 25th of July, that President Trump spoke to President Zelensky in furtherance of his Ukraine scheme. He thought he got away with it, that's with Bob Mueller, and he thought he could use his powers to interfere with that investigation so he could do what he wanted. He's just laying this out. He says he could act like he was above the law, and if he got caught, he would use his powers to try to obstruct the investigation and prevent the facts from coming. And that's exactly what he did. Continuing, and this is, we're getting, you know, right to the punchline here. But fortunately, because of the true American patriots who came forward to testify, despite the threats by the president against the people who worked in his own administration, they tell the story. They, on their own, produced documents that provide incontrovertible, clear, and overwhelming evidence that President Trump did this scheme. He put his political reelection interests over the nation's national security and the integrity of its elections. And then he talks about why this is of consequence. The reason why the Russia investigation playbook has failed Trump this time is that there is direct evidence of the president's scheme. Witnesses have come forward, and there is an easy story to tell. Donald Trump abused his power to pressure a foreign country to interfere on his behalf in the 2020 election. And that's why he deserves to be impeached. Now, I would add, there's a whole bunch of other reasons why he deserves to be impeached, as we posted on Facebook over the weekend. There are others who are suggesting that there's specific reasons why he should be impeached. For example, they're doing this whole riff, right? This whole, oh, my God, you know, Hunter Biden had this job, you know, and Joe Biden's being asked about this everywhere. And by the way, Joe Biden's got to come up with a good answer for that. His son has already said, his son, Hunter Biden, has already said, my taking that job showed poor judgment. And Hunter is right up front about the fact that he has had a lifetime of poor judgment. He was a drug addict. He went into rehab. I believe he got kicked out of a school. I mean, there's a collection of, shall we say, missteps that Hunter Biden has made. And I'm not saying this to be critical. I mean, I can point to a series of probably similarly stupid mistakes that I've made in my life, including abusing drugs as a teenager. And it was poor judgment on my part, sometimes. But my bottom line here is Hunter Biden took this job, as did the president of Poland. They were, you know, the Ukrainian company was trying to clean up their image. So they were getting some high-profile people on their board of directors. And it was bad judgment to do that. Or what Joe Biden should have said when Barack Obama tasked him with the job of cleaning up Ukraine, helping get rid of the corrupt prosecutor. Joe Biden should have said, I can't do that because my son works for a Ukrainian company and it would look like a conflict of interest. Either Joe or Hunter or both of them should have said no. If Joe Biden wants to put all this behind him, in my humble opinion, maybe you have a different opinion, he should simply take an interview. He's had three opportunities in the last week, in the last 5-6 days, and I think he's blown every one of them. He should simply take an interview, and in that interview, he should say, you know, my son and I had an agreement that I wouldn't interfere in his business world, he wouldn't interfere in my politics. And that way, everything's arm's length. And in retrospect, that was probably a mistake. And I should have told him not to take that job in Ukraine, and he should have known not to take that job in Ukraine, which he has said. And that's the end of it. It was poor judgment on his part. But poor judgment is a completely different thing from corruption. We weren't trying to overturn an election. We weren't trying to interfere with a U.S. presidential election. We weren't trying to conspire with a foreign government. It was my son taking a job from a company overseas, which lawyers in the United States do all the time. There's nothing illegal about it. So, yeah, it was a mistake. You know, if that's the only example of poor judgment in my life, that's pretty good. I can think of a few others, you know, Joe Biden could say, you know, and maybe point out his support for the Bankruptcy Reform Act of 2005 that made it impossible for students to get out of, you know, to bankrupt their student debts, or his support of the Iraq War or something like that. Things that he's already acknowledged were mistakes, right? Just tick off a couple of them and just lay it out there, and then it gets done. Then it's over. But, you know, the point that I was making, the larger point that I wanted to make in this entire context, is that Donald Trump's attack on Joe Biden right now is that his son worked for Burisma. This is the same guy whose daughter, Donald Trump's daughter, works in the White House. Donald Trump's son-in-law works in the White House. Rudy's son works in the White House. Bill Barr's son-in-law, the husband of Bill Barr's daughter, works in the White House. Bill Barr's daughter works at the Treasury Department. Donald Trump's sons are doing foreign business. They're traveling all over the world. Donald Trump's daughter is getting Chinese patents and Saudi grants. And he wants to talk about Hunter Biden? I mean, you know, pot, meat, kettle, right? I mean, this is like, really? And I see that Jerry Nadler is now speaking, and he's introducing Mr. Daniel Goldman, who is the lawyer for the Democrats. Either he's introducing him or he's asking him, and yeah, he's asking him questions. So let's just pick up the live coverage here of the hearings.
Election interference was a continuing risk to our free and fair elections. Did the evidence prove that President Trump was a threat to our elections?
Yes, it did, Mr. Chairman.
And in fact, finding of fact 8 says, faced with the revelation of his actions, President Trump publicly and repeatedly persisted in urging foreign governments, including Ukraine and China, to investigate his political opponent. This continued solicitation of foreign interference in a U.S. election presents a clear and present danger that the president will continue to use the power of his office for his personal political gain, close quote, I would add, in the next election. I now yield to my counsel, Mr. Burke, for additional questioning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Castor, as an experienced investigator, would you agree that it's relevant to look at evidence bearing on the president's state of mind that may help explain the president's
This is Mr.
actions?
Burke interviewing...
Sir, my only question to you is...
Oh, he's asking Stephen Castor, the lawyer,
for the Republicans.
It's relevant to consider. Sir, would you agree that Joe Biden was a leading Democratic contender to face President Trump in 2020?
I wouldn't agree with that.
You disagree with it. So, sir, it's your testimony
it's too early.
That President Trump did not view President Biden to be a legitimate contender.
I don't know
correct?
What President Trump believed or didn't believe, but it's too early.
Sir, as part of your inquiry, did you determine whether President Trump tweeted at all about former Vice President Joe Biden between January and July 25th, and how many times?
I didn't look at Twitter. I try to stay off Twitter lately.
Did you know President Trump tweeted about former Vice President Joe Biden over 25 times between January and July 25th?
I didn't look at those tweets.
Did you look at how many times President Trump mentioned Vice President Biden in a
This is the Democrats' lawyer interrogating the Republicans' lawyer. It's
President
fascinating.
President Trump goes to a lot of rallies. He does a lot of tweeting. I think it's pretty difficult to draw too many conclusions from his tweets or his statements at rallies.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, sir,
Mr. Chairman, parliamentary inquiry.
The gentleman is not recognized for parliamentary.
And the Republicans are doing their strategy. They've been trying to do this all day of trying to make the hearings boring. You know, they go on Fox News and they say, these hearings are just boring. And then they try to make them boring with all this parliamentary brouhaha. And this is Louis Gohmert having a hissy fit.
How many other rules are you just going to disregard?
Gentlemen will suspend. Parliamentary inquiries are not in order at this time.
Well, how about a point of order?
Point of order.
This is not appropriate to have a witness
have a point
be
order?
A questioner
a point
of somebody that was a witness
gentlemen,
when he was.
The gentleman will suspend.
It's just wrong.
Mr. Chairman.
The gentleman will refrain
Mr. Chairman,
from making...
Point of inquiry.
Well,
see, this is the Republicans are all. It's not going their way, basically. You know, it's like the Democrats' lawyer got the Republicans' lawyer to admit that, or to first of all say, oh, Trump didn't think that Biden was going to be his competitor. Therefore, there's no there. And you know, as soon as that was Castor, the Republicans' lawyer, and as soon as Barry Burke, the Democrats' lawyer, got that out of Stephen Castor, out of the Republicans' lawyer. That the entire premise of their defense of Donald Trump and the whole Ukraine thing was that Trump didn't actually think that Joe Biden was, you know, going to be possibly, probably the guy he was going to run against. And then Burke points out that Trump tweeted 25 times about Joe Biden from January until the July phone call with Zelensky. Clearly, he thought Biden was going to be the guy up against him. As soon as this all came out, all these Republicans are jumping in going, wait a minute, we want to talk about parliamentary procedure. We want to, stop the thing. Here it is. Wait, listen, this is insane.
It's inappropriate testimony in the committee.
It is. I have ruled the gentleman has the time pursuant to Rule 660.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
The gentleman will state a point
of order. Mr. Elk, that's not Rule 660.
And I wish Nadler would quit giving in to these guys.
Yes, the point of order is this. We operate by rules. If there's nothing specifically in the rule permitting this, we go by precedent. It is unprecedented for a person to come and sit who you've described as a witness to then return to the bench and begin questioning.
The gentleman has
stated, that is a point of order.
The gentleman has stated...
is that a point of order? Yes.
And now they're going to ask for
order,
a vote.
But I will point out...
Right. Let's drag this out.
A point of order. I will point out that we are... The gentleman... has been designated by me to do this questioning pursuant to Rule 660, House Resolution 660, which is part of the rules of the House.
We didn't do a soliloquy, then.
It is in accordance with the rules of the House And the gentleman's time.
These guys all knew it, by the way, that this is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Castro, you were aware that President Trump announced his candidacy for re-election in 2020, and he announced it the month before the July 25th call on June 21st?
Okay.
Did you find that? Did you look at that in your investigation as part of looking at President Trump's intent and what he intended on the July 25th call?
I mean, the date he announced his. I mean, he's obviously running for re-election. What is the date he announced his intent to run for re-election matter?
And sir, you knew that President Biden had already announced his intent to run in April of that year, too, correct?
It's been related to me. I don't know when Vice President Biden indicated he was going to run, as I sit here today.
Sir, you would agree with me that if the Ukraine announced a corruption investigation of former Vice President Joe Biden, that would hurt his credibility as a candidate. Would you agree with that basic principle, sir?
Well, nobody...
Here we go.
Yes or no, sir? Would you agree with that principle?
Well, I slightly disagree with the predicate, with the premise of your question, because we're talking about Hunter Biden.
Chairman, I object to the question that requests opinion evidence.
Now the Republicans are getting off
the floor.
Is he fit again?
I object to the question. Gentlemen, rule on whether the question
is in order
or not.
With more from the hearing, and then I'll be picking up your phone calls on it and offering my own commentary. What a remarkable time we're living through. What an absolutely remarkable time. We have a criminal in the White House who has for years run a criminal enterprise, and now he's being exposed.
Hiring is challenging, and it used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter. In fact, go to ZipRecruiter.com/begin. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, and they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you cannot miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. Right now, listeners here can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/begin. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BEGIN. ZipRecruiter.com/begin. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
We have been popping in on the proceedings that are going on in the impeachment inquiry of the House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Jerry Nadler. And the lawyer for the Democrats, Barry Burke, has been asking questions of the lawyer for the Republicans, Stephen Castor, and got Castor to say, well, you know, we didn't, you know, I don't think that Trump thought that he was going to run against Joe Biden. I don't think that's what, you know, that's why he was doing these things, asking for these investigations, you know, which is a pretty naked, you know, little bit of BS here. The Republicans keep going in and saying, well, let's disrupt it, particularly at the top of the hour, right? If they can take the first 5 or 10 minutes so that all the news agencies will move away from the hearing, or that people who are listening will say, oh, this is incredibly boring. I don't want to listen to this. Where's some good music? So this is their strategy. In fact, they've openly bragged about it. And they go on Fox News all the time and go, eh, those hearings are just so boring, right? It's all kinds of procedural stuff. So yeah, I want to just pop in, just listen and see what's going on. And
The monitor was turned. Now we can see.
Okay.
Thank you.
Gentlemen will resume.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in here it says that you said...
Okay, this is the Democrats' lawyer asking questions of the Republicans' lawyer.
Nothing more. Let's look at slide 7, if we may.
It doesn't say nothing more.
Let's look at... It says unusual, correct?
But it doesn't say and nothing more.
No, it says unusual. Is it a fact, sir, that what Ms. Williams says is it struck her as unusual and inappropriate? Isn't that correct, sir?
Okay.
That's what she said in her testimony.
Okay.
And in your staff report, you left out the inappropriate part, didn't you?
It wasn't a block quote. It was she felt it was unusual. She didn't raise the concerns that Lieutenant General Kellogg.
So, sir, let me ask you, were you as fair to the American people in describing what Ms. Williams said as you were in describing everything else in your report?
I don't have an issue with the way we described Ms. Williams' testimony.
Well, let's look at what else Ms. Williams said. Can we put up slide 8?
Oh, this is interesting.
This is from Ms. Williams' public testimony.
I think Ms. Williams is the person who works for Mike Pence.
Uh, quote, I thought that the references to Jennifer specific Williams. Individuals and investigations such as former Vice President Biden and his son struck me as political in nature, given that former Vice President is a political opponent of the president. So you left that out of your staff report too, didn't you?
You know, Ms. Williams.
Sir, did you leave that out of your report, yes or no?
If you're telling me I did, I mean, I don't know as I sit here right now whether that's in the report.
I'm telling you you did.
Okay.
He's basically saying you Republicans are cherry picking.
Do you have an explanation, sir, where you said Ms. Williams said that the call was unusual when she said it was unusual and inappropriate and of a political nature because it raised the vice president who she recognized was a political opponent of the president.
Her views of the call differ remarkably from Mr. Morrison, also from Lieutenant General Keller.
That's not my question. My question is, why did you misquote Ms. Williams in terms of what she said?
Her.
Why did you do it?
We certainly didn't misquote her.
So from the standard that you apply to your fact-finding in your report, you believe that it was entirely proper to say that Ms. Williams found the call to be unusual when, in fact, she found the call to be unusual and inappropriate and of a political nature, given that the former vice president is a political opponent of the president. Is that your testimony, sir?
I mean, we described what Ms. Williams said.
Sir,
she
is that
it
your
was inappropriate.
No, you didn't.
Ms. Chairman. If either you can ask, or you
the here we go again.
He can either ask or answer. He can't do both.
Gentlemen,
you can ask or answer. You can't do
the
both.
Republic.
The gentleman is not recognized.
The chairman,
the
chairman,
I make a point of order that he's badgering the witness.
It's the old circus. Okay, let's back away from this for a minute.
The gentleman will continue.
The gentleman will continue. Okay, let's go back to it.
Sir, you invoked Mr.
Moore. Chairman, can you rule on my point of order that he's badgering the witness? Because he's doing
this is, again, the Republicans.
Sir,
we can't have
invoked,
this. We don't want this testimony. This is riveting.
Does not call for
we've got to make it boring so people won't turn away.
The committee is not an order, and the chairman is not an order.
That is not a point of order. The committee is in order.
Well, would you rule on my original
Jerry,
point
quit
of order.
Defending it all. Just say,
point of order was
shut
not
up.
Recognizable and does not necessitate a ruling.
That the chairman, lawyer is badgering the witness? We have to have some decorum in here, and you have your rules of decorum, which aren't comporting with everybody else's rules.
I will say that sharp cross-examination of a witness is not badgering the witness. The gentleman will continue.
Mr. Chairman.
It is if it's by another witness.
The gentleman has the time.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
So here we go again.
Point of order.
Mr. Chairman, see, the longer the Republicans can drag this out, the more likely they are to cause people to stop watching the hearings.
No, it is not correct.
Or to stop listening to them on
the
radio. That's their goal. And then they go on Fox News and they say, oh, I don't know, it was just such a boring thing. You know, it was always, you know, it's just amazing. And then the other thing, of course, they say is, well, we couldn't actually hear from the people who knew what was going on. We never heard from Mick Mulvaney. We never heard from John Bolton. We never heard from Vice President Pence. We never heard from Trump himself. So how can you have an impeachment hearing? And of course, the reason we haven't heard from them is because Donald Trump, in defiance of the Supreme Court in Nixon v. USA or USA v. Nixon, and in defiance of the Constitution, is saying, no, I'm not going to give you anything.
You heard the call.
Okay, so now he's back to the question.
President Trump was not discussing the talking points that the NSC had prepared based on official U.S. policy and was instead talking about the investigations that Fiona Hill had warned you about. And then you reported it immediately to the NSC legal advisor. Is that the correct claim of events here? And Mr. Morrison said, that's correct. Before I ask you, Mr. Castor, let me ask you, Mr. Goldman. Earlier, before your presentation, we showed a testimony of Ms. Hill where she referred to what President Trump was trying to do as running a domestic political errand. Is that what you understand? Is that what you intended to ask Mr. Morrison about in your question to him?
Yes, it was about these two specific investigations that President Trump ultimately did discuss.
You got a Democratic lawyer interrogating the Democratic lawyer.
These are the same two investigations that were discussed.
This is Daniel Goldman being interrogated by Barry Burke.
That were at issue throughout the entirety of the scheme. And so what our evidence found was that any time there was a reference to investigations, it referenced the Biden investigation and the 2016 election investigation. And in fact, Ambassador Volker actually said that whenever he was saying, using the term corruption, what he meant was those specific two investigations.
And what was the significance to you that Mr. Morrison, who Mr. Castor himself has relied on and invoked twice today, where he said that he understood these were the investigations that Fiona Hill had warned him about, what did you understand that to mean?
When Dr. Hill left and Tim Morrison replaced her, they had transition meetings. And during one of those transition meetings, Dr. Hill told Tim Morrison about what she believed to be this irregular channel that Ambassador Sondland was operating, where they were pushing for Ukraine to do these investigations. And Dr. Hill in particular was very concerned because, as she said, as you pointed out, that was a domestic political errand, and what she was working on and the National Security Council was working on related to national security and foreign policy, and those were two entirely separate things.
And was she expressing the view that President Trump had chose his own personal political interests over the foreign policy positions that Ms. Hill was trying to pursue?
At the time that she said that to Tim Morrison, she was not aware of whether President Trump had actually endorsed these investigations, but she did testify that after she read the call transcript, which she only read after it was released like the rest of us, she said that she put two and two together and realized that that is exactly what he was talking about.
And what was two and two again?
It equals four.
And what is four in this investigation, sir?
Well, it was used by two witnesses, Ambassador Sondland and David Holmes, as the only logical conclusion to explain why the security assistance had been withheld, was being withheld from Ukraine. And based on all of the various factors and their direct involvement in issues related to Ukraine, they concluded that the security assistance was being withheld to put pressure and as a condition on the initiation of the two investigations that are referenced here.
Yep. All right, turning to you, Mr.
I got to clear a couple things up here, though. I got to clear a couple things up here, if I may. First of all, Morrison was concerned. Morrison didn't think the call
sir,
was
sir, you have no, there's no question.
The gentleman has the time, not the witness. I mean,
this is
sir,
the Republican lawyer jumping in here saying, you, wait a minute, I want to say something.
You said,
by the way, Volker never meant.
The gentleman has the time. The clock will stop if he's interrupted.
Will this witness be able to cross-examine Mr. Burke like he's being able to cross-examine the opposing witness?
Louis Gohmert wants to. So here we go. We're off. We're off again to the races. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's just pop in for a second and see what's going on.
The Ukrainians knew that he, meaning Rudy Giuliani, was a conduit to convince President Trump that President Zelensky was serious about reform. Isn't that what you wrote in your report, sir? Okay. And in fact, during the call, President Trump asked President Zelensky to speak directly
to the speaker right now is Barry Burke, the Democrats' lawyer.
That President Trump was interested in, correct?
You referred him to Rudy, yeah.
And he's asking...
Yes.
The Republican's lawyer, Mr. Olson.
President Zelensky said, oh, we already knew that, and he's been in touch with my aides, correct?
That's right. In fact, I mean, the Ukrainians are the ones that first, President Zelensky is the one who first brings up Mr. Giuliani on the call.
Right, because they knew that Mr. Giuliani was a conduit to the president, and if they made Mr. Giuliani happy, they'd make the President Trump happy.
Ambassador Volker testified, though, that Mr. Giuliani had a negative impression of Ukraine and that he was possibly fueling the president's views, and so they had, there were some discussions about, hey, if
this
you convince Rudy
actually.
That President Zelensky is a true reformer, the real deal, that would be a beneficial link.
Well, sir, you agree that President
Giuliani, his name is Steve
before
Castor,
July 25th call and after, was pushing for the Ukrainians to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden. Isn't that correct? Yes or no?
Yeah, I mean, the record is somewhat spotty with Giuliani. I mean, I know the New York Times reported in May, but Ambassador Volker gave a pretty detailed account of his meeting on July 19th.
Well, let's take a look. If we could put up slide 16, the New York Times article you referred to.
Yeah.
Right, and the article says, I'll read it. Mr. Giuliani, and this is dated May 9th, 2019, before the call, Mr. Giuliani said he plans to travel to Kiev, the Ukrainian capital, in the coming days and wants to meet with the nation's president-elect to urge him to pursue inquiries that, and then it continues, that allies of the White House contend could yield new information about two matters of intense interest to Mr. Trump. One is the origin of the special counsel's investigation, goes on to describe it, new sentence. The other is the involvement of former Vice President Joe Biden's son. Okay, and now that was in the New York Times article. And
can we talk about the breakfast with Volker?
If we could, not yet. If we could continue the rest of the article to the next slide, which is slide 17. This is the same article. And Mr. Giuliani was very explicit when he was interviewed. He said, and this isn't foreign policy. I'm now quoting the words that are highlighted. It says, it'll be very, very helpful to my client. My only client is the President of the United States. He's the one I have an obligation to report to him what happened regarding the Ukraine. Now, sir, were you aware on that same day Mr. Giuliani gave an interview about what he intended to do? And let's go to slide 18. This is from Real Clear Politics, and should be in the screen in front of you as well. And what he, what Mr.
This
Giuliani
is all fascinating stuff. It's the Tom Hartman program. We'll be back with more of the hearing, and, you know, when it's interesting, and my rants and your calls when it's not. So stick around. The Tom Hartman program, the place where despair is not an option.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Well, now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com has blue like the color blue. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. If you could benefit from extra function and more confidence where it counts, Blue Chew is the fast and easy way to enhance your performance. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your doctor in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our podcast listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code TOM, T-H-O-M. All you pay is $5 for shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code T-H-O-M, promo code TOM, to try it free. Blue Chew, the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring our podcast.
He's being interviewed now the same day in a Politico, and he's asked about Mr. Giuliani. He's leaving soon, I think in the next couple days. Mr. Trump says, I see. Well, I will speak to him about it before he leaves.
Volker, you know, counseled against the perspective Giuliani was taking.
So my question to you, sir, is this tweet, what they're talking about, well, let me ask you, Mr. Goldman, you haven't had a chance in a while, this tweet, is that referring to a personal political issue of President Trump or official U.S. policy?
That's a personal political issue. And if you don't mind, I'll just take a moment to respond to Mr. Castor, because
please do.
On that July 19th meeting between Ambassador Volker and Rudy Giuliani, Ambassador Volker told Mr. Giuliani that the allegations about Joe Biden were completely bogus and wrong. And Mr. Giuliani actually told, according to Ambassador Volker's testimony, Mr. Giuliani said that he knew that. And yet, for the next 2 months, he continued to push for that same investigation at the direction of President Trump, who had also directed President Zelensky to contact Mr. Giuliani. So that July 19th meeting that Mr. Castor brought up is actually quite important to this investigation.
And sir, you already explained that on May 23rd, when the official folks who went to the inauguration of President Zelensky came back to tell the president how impressed they were, the only thing he had to say to them was, talk to Rudy. He was taking his official government people responsible for Ukraine and handing them over to Rudy Giuliani so that they could work with him for the issues that he was focused on for the president, as evidenced in the tweet. Is that fair?
I agree with Mr. Castor. I think that's what the evidence shows, that at that May 23rd meeting, President Trump directed and delegated authority over Ukraine matters to Ambassador Sondland, Volker, and Secretary Perry, and told them to work with Rudy. And then over the next 3 months, that's exactly what happened at the president's direction.
Okay. And in fact, let me show you what is slide 22, if I may, that you understood the Ukrainians recognized how important Rudy Giuliani was and satisfying him in order to stay on good terms with President Trump?
Yes, they quickly realized it, I think, from their own internal conversations, because Mr. Giuliani had back channels to getting to the Ukrainian officials. And Ambassador Volker told to the Ukrainians as well that there was this, quote, Giuliani factor that President Zelensky, he actually told it to President Zelensky, that there was this Giuliani factor that they needed to deal with the president.
And in fact, this is the senior aide to President Zelensky saying to Ambassador Volker on August 13th, which is obviously after the July 25th call, thank you for meeting in your clear and very logical position. Will be great meet with you before my departure and discuss. I feel that the key for many things is Rudy, and I'm ready to talk to him with him at any point. Please let me know when you can meet Audrey. And again, that's Rudy, am I right, that's the Ukrainians recognize that Rudy Giuliani, who's demanding the investigation of Mr. Trump's political rival, was key to getting anything done.
I don't mean to be a stickler, but I believe this text was actually July 10th. And this was a critical text because what it is saying is Mr. Yermak, after having spoken to Mr. Volker a week before and learning about the importance of Giuliani, requested to Ambassador Volker to meet, to set up a meeting with Mr. Giuliani. That then proceeded to this July 19th breakfast that Mr. Castor said, and then a July 22nd phone call, and then ultimately they met in Madrid on August 2nd.
Thank you, Mr. Goldman. Further evidence of the meticulous investigation that Chairman Schiff and his staff with you directed. We will stand corrected. Thank you. And I will take that and ask that the record reflect that is the correct date. In either case, Rudy was key whenever it was said, correct?
Certainly.
And now let me ask, sir, let me put up slide 24. And Mr. Goldman, am I correct that there came a point in time when President Trump, through his chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, ordered that the approved military aid to Ukraine be withheld, as you previously indicated, correct?
Yes.
And this is the testimony of the people who were involved. Mr. Kent said, when this happened, there was great confusion among the rest of us because we didn't understand why that had happened. Since there was unanimity that this aid was in our national interest, it just surprised us all. Mr. Holmes, and then you had the additional hold of the security assistance with no explanation whatsoever, and we still have an explanation, and we still don't have an explanation for why that happened or in the way that happened. Ms. Croft, the only reason given was that the order came at the direction of the president. So, sir, let me ask you a question. Did all the agencies involved believe that the aid should be given?
Okay, right now we've got Barry Burke. He's questioning the Democrats' investigator. One is the lawyer for, like, the Democrats, and the other is the lawyer for the Intelligence Committee. And so here we go. I just want to go back to this because they're getting into some of this.
Resumption of U.S. aid would likely not occur until Ukraine provided the public anti-corruption statement that we have been discussing for many weeks. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, he said that at a meeting on September 1st with Mr. Yermak in Warsaw.
And the statement that they had been talking about, let me put up a slide that we put together, slide 27. And you recall, sir, that in the draft statement that the Ukrainians...
Barry Burke is asking questions of Daniel Goldman.
And was that statement on their mind so they could get a White House meeting and satisfy President Trump and have the aid released?
Yes, Ambassador Sondland testified to that, and Ambassador Volker also testified to that.
And am I correct that Mr. Yermak gave a statement where he did not make any reference to Vice President Biden, correct?
Correct.
And then was that Rudy Giuliani who said in the second one that it had to include a reference that they were going to investigate Burisma in the 2016 election?
That's right.
And what did Burisma stand for? Did all your witnesses say they had an understanding of what that meant? Or did the witnesses say that?
So every single witness said after reading the phone call on July 25th that it was clear Burisma equaled Biden, that they were one and the same. There were only two witnesses who said that they did not know that until that time. And there was ample testimony. There was a lot of testimony from people involved in all aspects of Ukraine policy. Who indicated that it was completely unrealistic and unlikely that anyone who had anything to do with Ukraine would not know that the Burisma investigation related to the Bidens.
We are literally hearing history being made, outing the crimes of Donald Trump.
Burisma and Vice President Biden, correct?
Correct, yes.
And did the Ukrainians complain repeatedly, we talked a little bit about it, that they didn't want to be a pawn in U.S. Democratic politics by helping President Trump's reelection campaign by making such a statement?
They said that in July, And in August, ultimately, they didn't give the statement in large part because they had reservations, given that President Zelensky was an anti-corruption reformer. They had reservations about engaging in U.S. domestic politics. That's right.
I want to go back to you, Mr. Castor. You said that when President Trump said to Ambassador Sondland on September 17th that he had no quid pro quo, you said he had no reason. September 9th, you said he had no reason to be any less than candid. That's what you said. No reason to be any less than candid. Let me show you, sir, what happened, though, on September 5th. Let me show you slide 52.
Sometimes it takes a minute for them to get their graphics together.
Days before he made that statement, the Washington Post printed an article that says Trump tries to force Ukraine to meddle in the 2020 elections and goes on to describe some of those efforts. And, sir, let me show you whether President Trump was aware of that article before he volunteered no quid pro quo as a defense. Let me show you a tweet by President Trump on slide 53. Now, and again, he is putting out a tweet that is essentially saying the Democrats, following up the article, that they are pursuing impeachment. Again, showing awareness that this has now been reported on. So, Mr. Goldman, is it fair to say what Mr. Castor said, that President Trump had no reason to be any less than candid about saying no quid pro quo?
No, I think President Trump had every reason to try to put out that message at that point. As Ambassador Sondland said, even if you credit Ambassador Sondland's version of the testimony, which is contradicted by other witnesses who took contemporaneous notes and were far more credible than Mr. Sondland, who had to amend his testimony a couple times, he said even in that comment, he said no quid pro quo out of the blue without any question about whether or not there was a quid pro quo.
Gentlemen's time has expired. Chair now recognizes the ranking member for his first round of questions. Pursuant to House Resolution 660, the ranking member or his counsel have 45 minutes to question the witnesses.
Okay, this is
going
to be...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it's become very evident
Doug Collins.
The craziness of this hearing, especially not having Mr. Schiff here. But please put back up the last slide. I have no idea what number it is.
Be interesting to see what he has to say here.
53.
Yep.
The slide was the New York or the Washington Post article, or maybe it was the Trump tweet.
Okay, while we're doing this, I mean, I think it's just the most amazing statement came out there. We're proofing that a tweet that said that the Democrats were concerned about impeachment. There's nothing the Democrats have not been concerned about for 2.5 years. Since August, since November.
All right, we know what he's going to be saying and what he's going to be doing. So I'm just going to bail out of that for right now. The other big news is that the report, the Russian inquiry from the Justice Department, this is the Inspector General of the Justice Department looking into whether the FBI started investigating the Donald Trump campaign back in 2015 or early 2016 because they were out to get Donald Trump. This is the argument that Trump has been making. This is the argument that Fox News has been making. This is the argument that Tucker Carlson has been making. This is the argument that I've heard Rush Limbaugh make on his radio show, is that the FBI was out to get him. And the proof of it was Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, two FBI agents who were working on this case, who were also having an affair, and they were sending text messages to each other. And between the I love you was, oh, my God, what if Trump gets elected? And Strzok saying, oh, don't worry, we've got insurance, or, you know, that's not going to happen. And so the Republicans, having released these private text messages to the world to try to destroy the lives of Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, is now pushing back. Peter Strzok has already been pushing back. The Republicans exposed this private affair and the text messages associated with it and said, this is proof that these rogue actors in the FBI were going after Donald Trump simply because they're Democrats and they hate Trump and Republicans. So Bill Barr said to the Inspector General of the Justice Department, check it out. Look into it. Did the FBI start this investigation because they were trying to get Trump? And that report was released. And Well, I'll just give you the first paragraph or the first sentence of the New York Times report by Charlie Savage and Alan Goldman. A long-awaited report by the Justice Department's Inspector General released on Monday sharply criticized the FBI's handling of a wiretap application used in the early stages of its Russia investigation, but exonerated former bureau leaders of President Trump's accusation that they engaged in a politicized conspiracy to sabotage them. Investigators uncovered no documentary or testimonial evidence of political bias behind official actions. The investigation was known as Crossfire Hurricane. It totaled 400 pages. This is Michael Horowitz, this is the Inspector General. He did uncover substantial dysfunction, carelessness, and errors in one part of the inquiry, which was the FBI's application for a wiretap of Carter Page. But this is, you know, these are the kind of screw-ups that, you know, filling out forms wrong or apparently in this case, somebody filling out a form, not just wrong, but, you know, lying in the information, but not for political purposes. They were concerned that the Russians were trying to hack our election and trying to get inside the Trump campaign, and they wanted to find out what was going on. And I would say it was probably an abundance of zeal, but whatever it was, they clearly found that there was no political bias, cap NPB, no political bias. So Trump's entire conspiracy theory just disintegrated, which, you know, is kind of a fine thing, right? So Doug Collins is now interviewing Daniel Goldman. You know, we may get back to some of that in a little bit. That might produce some interesting fireworks.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, fair and only slightly unbalanced. The holiday season is upon us. It's that time of year again. Family, friends, and everything so conveniently documented in video and photography, capturing every laugh, smile, and under-eye bag. What was that last part? Under-eye bags, wrinkles, and crow's feet? Yes, those telltale signs of aging. Who wants those in their holiday cards? Now, imagine they're gone. I'm not talking about some risky, expensive surgery. Just gone in minutes. It's called Plexaderm, a clinically studied serum that visibly eliminates your wrinkles, crow's feet, and under-eye bags in minutes. It's exactly what you need to get through the holiday season and beyond. Don't believe it? I didn't either until I tried it. Now I don't have to imagine anymore. I look like me, but younger. Plexaderm can give you the confidence you'll need to face that judgmental family member. We all have one. And the best part is Plexaderm goes on clear, so nobody will know you're using it, unless, of course, you tell them. Get Plexaderm's holiday promotion. Go to Plexaderm.com and use my code Hartman, H-A-R-T-M-A-N-N, for 50% off plus an additional $10 off. That's right, 50% off plus an extra $10 off. This offer is also available by calling 1-800-741-7998. That's 1-800-741-7998. Again, 1-800-741-7998. Or visit Plexaderm.com today and use the code Hartman with two N's at checkout. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Mr. Castor is still blithering on. We checked in on him during the break, and he's the Republican lawyer, and he's going on and on about how, you know, Trump wasn't trying to intimidate or influence Mr. Zelensky when he said, but I need a favor, though. All right. And it's just amazing. You know, it's like it's right in front of their faces. Anyhow, Aaron in Seattle. Hey, Aaron, what's on your mind today?
I was in a conversation with a family member over Thanksgiving about emoluments, and this family member said that because Trump is no longer the head of his company and his net worth is going down, he is thus immune from emoluments. So I was just curious, what is emoluments, and is President Trump actually violating the emoluments clause?
The emoluments clause has absolutely nothing to do with your net worth. And Trump still owns, is still the principal owner of the Trump companies, of, you know, some 700-800 companies that make up the little Trump empire. And what the emoluments clause, what an emolument is a payment or a gift. And so when the Saudis come over to Washington, D.C., and they rent the entire floor of a Trump hotel for $227,000 a night, as I recall. Maybe that was for several nights. Lobbying groups are doing the same thing, sometimes to the tune of over $100,000. And, you know, renting lots and lots of Trump facilities. Sometimes they don't even use them. That's simply a way of conveying money into the pocket of Donald Trump. And whether he runs the company on a day-to-day basis or not, the money still ends up in his pocket. So that's an emolument.
So basically, if he makes like $1 from it, then he's violated the emolument, right?
If it is from anybody who has anything to do with a foreign government or with any domestic entity that Donald Trump or any of the executive agencies could help. This is why every other president, you know, in the modern era has put who had any assets or resources and, you know, has put them into a blind trust. The most famous being Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter took his peanut farm. And yeah, the president probably through the Department of Agriculture could have something to do with peanut policy, right? And Jimmy Carter took his peanut farm, put it in a blind trust, and gave it to a trustee in Georgia who took over running his farm, his peanut farm, and for the 4 years that he was president. The guy was not allowed to even give reports to Jimmy Carter. So for 4 years, Carter had no idea what was going on. And the guy so screwed up Carter's peanut farm that when he left the presidency, he had to sell off a whole bunch of land just to recover it. He almost lost the entire thing. And, you know, you could argue that's not fair to Jimmy Carter, but you know, Jimmy Carter was trying to comply with the emoluments clause. George Herbert Walker Bush and George W. Bush, both multi-millionaires, put all of their assets in blind trusts when they became presidents. I don't know about Reagan. I'm sure, you know, I know that he put his stuff in a blind trust. I just don't know if he, you know, was super rich or if he was just, you know, living off the, I'm guessing he was probably relatively rich, you know, whether he was a centimillionaire worth more than $100 million or just an average millionaire, I don't know. And there's two emoluments clauses. The one says that basically no officer of the United States government shall accept emoluments from any foreign source. And so the Secretary of State can't take, you know, so this is why if you watch that show, Madam Secretary, they'll give the Secretary of State a gift and she immediately hands it off to a guy and says, put this in the museum, basically. So she doesn't get it. All right. So the Secretary of State doesn't get it. And that's true. Okay. That would be true of the president as well. But then there's a second emoluments clause in Article 2 that says that the president shall be compensated for his work as president. In other words, he gets a paycheck to be defined by Congress. They set his pay. But he shall receive no other emoluments while in office. In other words, he cannot take pay from any other source. And it's possible that he's okay with that by literally not taking a paycheck from the Trump Organization while he's in the White House. But we don't know if he's doing that or not because we haven't seen his taxes. But I think that you could also argue that, again, an emolument in that context would mean, you know, with that Saudi money ending up in his pocket when they use the hotel, or even more blatant when he orders the U.S. military to stop at an obscure airport in Scotland that just happens to be next door to his failing golf club and stay at the golf club, you know, where the guys on their per diem literally can't even afford to eat in his restaurants because they're so expensive. But you and I are picking up the tab for their rooms. So anyhow, that's how it all works. Aaron, thanks for the call.
Any other members who have wished to vote who have not voted? The clerk will report.
Mr. Chairman, there are 15 ayes and 24 noes.
The motion is not agreed to. Now we will engage in questions under the five-minute rule. I yield myself 5 minutes for the purpose of questioning the witnesses. Mr. Goldman, can you please explain the difference between Vice President Biden's request to Ukraine a few years ago and President Trump's request to Ukraine earlier this year?
Yes, when Vice President Biden pressured the Ukrainian president to remove the corrupt prosecutor general, he was doing so with an international consensus as part of U.S. policy. The entire European Union supported that. The IMF supported that. The IMF, which also gave the loans that he was referring to. And so he did that as part of the entire international community's consensus. And when President Trump is asking for this investigation of Joe Biden, all of the witnesses, every single one, testified that that had nothing to do with official U.S. policy.
And Vice President Biden's request had no personal political benefit, whereas President Trump's request did?
Yes. In fact, if the witnesses testified that if that corrupt prosecutor general were actually removed, it would be because he was not prosecuting corruption. So the witnesses said that by removing that prosecutor general and adding a new one, that there was an increased chance that corruption in Ukraine would be prosecuted, including as it related to the Burisma company, which his son was on the board of.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Goldman, can you please explain exactly what happened with the phone records obtained by the Intelligence Committee?
Yeah, thank you. I would like to set the record straight on that. This is a very basic and usual investigative practice where people involved in a scheme or suspected to be involved in a scheme, investigators routinely seek their records. And just to be very clear, this is metadata. It is only call to, call from, and length. It is not the content of the calls or the text messages. So there's no content, there's no risk of invading any communications with lawyers or journalists or attorney-client, that none of that exists and there are no risks to that. And so what we did is for the people that, several of the people that we had investigated and subpoenaed and who were alleged to be part of the scheme, we got call records so that we could corroborate some of their testimony or figure out maybe there's additional communications that we were unaware of. What we then did is we took the call records and we match it up with important events that occurred during the scheme. And we start to see if there are patterns, because call records can be quite powerful circumstantial evidence. In this case, it just so happened that people who were involved in the President Trump scheme were communicating with the president's lawyer, who was also involved in the scheme, a journalist, a staff member of Congress, and another member of Congress. We, of course, did not at all seek in any way, shape, or form to do any investigation on anyone, a member of Congress or a staff member of Congress. It just happened to be that they were in communication with people involved in the president's scheme.
And everything you did was basically standard operating procedure for a well-run investigation?
Every investigation in 10 years that I did, probably, we got call records.
Thank you. Mr. Goldman, did White House counsel make his view clear about witnesses and evidence requested by the investigating committees, and what was that view?
We never heard from the White House counsel. Other than the letter, which basically just said, we will not at all cooperate with this investigation in any way, shape, or form. They never reached out to engage in this accommodation process. It was a complete stonewall. Not only will the White House not participate and not cooperate and not respond to the duly authorized subpoenas of Congress, but the White House says we are also going to direct every other executive branch agency to defy
this. Thank you. Now I have a series of questions, and please keep your answers brief if you can. During last week's hearing, my Republican colleague said that Congress has not built a sufficient record to impeach the president at this stage. As a foreign prosecutor, you have spent years building substantial case records. What is the strength of the record here?
I think we have moved fast, and I think that the evidence is really overwhelming. We have 17 witnesses with overlapping and consistent statements.
And the committee managed to collect such a compelling record in the face of unprecedented obstruction by the president, correct?
Yes.
And was the obstruction so pervasive that the evidence pointed to a course of conduct or a plan to cover up any presidential misconduct?
We did find that there was an effort to conceal the president's conduct, yes.
And I understand that on October 8th, the White House wrote a letter explaining that President Trump had directed his administration not to cooperate with the White House's impeachment inquiry. In the letter, the White House counsel wrote, quote, President Trump cannot permit his administration to participate in this partisan inquiry under the circumstances. Now, the investigative committees tried to interview dozens of witnesses, and including current and former Trump administration officials, and was stymied with respect to most of them. Is that correct?
There were 12 witnesses who were directed not to appear, and ultimately they did not appear.
Thank you very much. My time has expired. I yield to the ranking member, Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Goldman, it's an interesting thing now. So now we can commit basically extortion or put pressure on others as long as we have the international community behind us. As long as we get enough people to think we're okay, I can then go extort anybody I want to. As long as enough people think it's okay. That was, in essence, what you just said. Whether you believe it or not, that's what, as I copied the notes. But I want to go to the phone records. It's a novel approach. The phone records issue, and I'm not, and hear me clearly. I have no problem with the subpoena as far as the subpoena power from Congress. Not a problem. My problem, as you did not answer in the previous, though, is taking the metadata, the numbers. I did not say anything. It's interesting you had to go and say, well, there's no content, anything else. We've had that debate in Congress now for the last few years on the FISA program and other things, which, by the way, this committee should be hearing FISA this week. The IG report just came out, and we're doing this. It's interesting to see to me that the calls in the metadata and not the content, What the problem I have here is this, is if Rudy Nunez, Giuliani, Nunez and Harvey were the only phone records returned from the subpoena, why are these released? Here's the problem. You took the committee, and this is why I want to know who ordered it. The committee made a choice. Chairman Schiff, who I'm assuming because he's not here, or you, who did get to come, at least thank you for showing up, made a conscious choice to put these records into the report. It was a drive-by. It was a gratuitous drive-by that you wanted to smear the ranking member or smear these others because they were in those numbers that were connected to that. I'm not saying you knew the content, I'm not saying anything else. In fact, you just admitted just a second ago that it was simply they were contacting these people. The problem I have with that is...
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It was getting a little bit interesting there. Jerry Nadler was talking to Daniel Goldman, and they were talking about, you know, stuff was coming out. But then he turned it over to Doug Collins, and Doug Collins is trying to do the let's play minutia game and let me complain about stuff. So I'm just going to move on from that. Bernard in Savannah, Georgia. Hey, Bernard, what's on your mind today?
Americans walking around with their head in the sand. They have no idea how dangerous Trump is. He's a narcissist. I've been hearing the word for years. I Googled it. I had to sit down because I couldn't believe what I was reading. If he's going down, he's going to try to take you with him. Misery love company.
Yep.
Americans walking around like zombies. Don't tell me this man would not do something with no nuclear codes. He goes on the ground for 25 years somewhere, Wisconsin or whatever.
Yeah.
He don't care about you. And another thing, too, I'll make it short and to the point that... Is anything going to be done about his family making all that money? Isn't that against the law?
Yeah, I don't know if it's against the law, but they're obviously grifters. And to complain that Joe Biden's son took a job in Ukraine when you've got your daughter, your son, your son-in-law, your attorney general's son, your attorney general's daughter, all on your payroll is pretty rich. Thank you. You made your point very well, and I appreciate it. Joan in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Joan, what's up?
Tom. The Democrats and their poor messaging, don't they realize that words are important and that people out here are struggling every day? I mean, not even if they're not poor, but I mean, just the daily routine of life, you know, occupies so much of your time and attention. But the Democrats just don't message right.
I agree.
They just don't. I mean, you got to make it.
They should be.
They got to talk to people the same way they talk to their families over the kitchen table.
Well, I think they should be doing what the Republicans did when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. They should be holding investigations into what was the deal. Why was it that when Jared Kushner went over to the Middle East and asked for $1 billion and didn't get it, that the Saudis blockaded Qatar until Qatar gave Jared that money? I think that is worthy of a congressional investigation. And I think that there's all kinds of examples of corruption that should be being investigated. Ivanka Trump, what, she got a patent for voting machines from China? Seriously? I would like to see a congressional inquiry into that. The Democrats just are not willing to play hardball here. And they finally got their spine together on impeachment. But even here, I think that they're going very, very soft. So, Joan, I share your concern. And thank you so much for the call. Thank you for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. So get out there, get active, and also share progressive media with your friends. Tag your it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.